Talk about reverb. There we go. I am particularly tired. We had two fabulous weddings here yesterday. It took a lot of energy. So I'm going to invite you to please rise as your bodies and spirits allow and help me have the energy to sing. There's a river flowing in my soul. Please rise. And so we'll hear it played through once and then we'll sing. Come sing a song with me. You know, Mary, of course, knows all the hymns. Yeah. All right. So this one is sung with energy and spirit. We're going to sing just the first two verses of hymn number 346. Come sing a song with me. After me, Gaudamus. Gaudamus. Let's say it together because we have to sing it together. Gaude.
Gaude.
Amus.
Amus.
Okay, so it's Gaude Amus.
Gaude Amus.
Hodie.
Hodie.
Okay, and we're singing Latin rather than speaking it, so it sounds a little bit different than if you were doing the reading of it. So Gaude Amus, Gaude Amus, Gaude Amus, Hodie. Okay? Amus, Gaude Amus, Gaude Amus, Hodie. And before we play it, I'll let you hear it once. Gaude amus, gaude amus, gaude amus, hodie. Gaude amus, gaude amus, hodie. Gaude amus, gaude amus, hodie. Sunshine's limit of range. All right, you get the sense? So it's kind of energetic. Sounds Latin, but it's not got that Latin feel. Well, different
mean?
Latin feel. Huh?
What do the words mean?
Oh, see. You're going to ask that, and I knew it 5 seconds ago.
Today.
Huh? Be happy today?
Be happy.
Thank you.
Let's enjoy today.
All right, so here we go. One, two.
Good morning.
Good morning.
That was a neat way to start out. Welcome to the First Unitarian Church of Alton. My name is Dee Evans. Here we walk together through many transitions that we face in life. Here we gather and share our beginnings, our endings, and the journey in between. Here we speak of birth, death, marriage, separation, joy, pain, laughter, and heartbreak. Here we practice being human and all of our facets so that we may live well in the world. We are Unitarian Universalists. I offer you my welcome, and in particular to those who are first-time visitors. We invite you to fill out one of the visitor cards found in the back of the hymnal and place it in the offering plate or give it to an usher. We will send you our church newsletter for the next 3 months to let you know about the programs and activities going on here at church. We are glad you are here and hope to see you again in the future. We do have a nursery for infants and young children out through the door to the left. At the front of our sanctuary, we have a spirit chair which includes activities for all ages. You are invited to go to the spirit chair at any time during the service and take an activity back to your seat. We welcome everyone to this home of comfort, spirit, justice, and hope. And now we have some announcements. On Saturday, November 14th, we will be having a party just because here at First UU. It will be a chili party, so please dig up your favorite chili and dessert recipes and put 11/14th on your calendar. Details to come. I have no idea who wrote this. There's no name.
Sayer.
Robin.
Okay.
Oh, Robin. Good. Everybody look at... Oh, that Robin. Okay, Robin. Our Robin. The other Robin.
Okay.
All right. This is, I think, from Nancy.
Yes.
Yay! TJ pizza orders from Jake Conniff are in the freezer. Names are on the outside of the bags. A big thank you from Jake and the Robohawks. This is an announcement, and I believe it's from Kathleen. This month, we'll be starting our 8th year of providing meals to those in need through our 4th Saturday Lunch program. Kathleen McKeever needs your help in continuing this community outreach service. We usually feed between 60 and 80 people per month. Volunteers are needed to provide sandwiches and cookies, plus helping in the kitchen with preparing beverages and bagging the lunches. We would like for 8 people to each volunteer to provide 10 sandwiches and others to volunteer to provide cookies. Please let Kathleen know what you'll be providing by signing up on the 4th Saturday lunch sheet in the Kate Worker Room. And in case anybody doesn't know, it's on that desk across there. All the sign-up sheets for everything are there. Okay, this is Ed. Ed, raise your hand so everybody knows who you are. Okay, this is Ed Navarro. The 1st to 6th grade RE reading program continues to need volunteers to enjoy reading and discussing Dr. Zeus with our children. The children are our future. Help them lead the way. Sunshine, do you?
Yes. Good morning, everybody. My name is Pastor Sunshine Wolf. I am the interim minister here at First Unitarian Church of Alton. That means I have about 9 months left on my contract as our search committee is busily looking for the next called settled minister. We have just a couple of things. One, today after worship at 11:30, we will have our new member orientation. If you've signed the book recently or are thinking about signing the book, it's important that you attend this session with me and with Mary Weber, and we will provide you with information about what it means to sign the book, to join the church, and expectations and needs. I have been working for 17 days straight. I have been here at worship every Sunday for the last 2.5 months. I have asked the board and been given permission to take Monday and Tuesday and half of Wednesday off. I love you all, but I really need a break. So if you're not hearing back from me, know that's why. I will be back Wednesday, and I will get back to emails and all of that stuff at that time. So just know that that's going on. And with that, that concludes this morning's announcements. We begin our worship service with a prelude. Thank you.
us begin our worship service today with the words of Sulgel Rinchepe from his book, The Tibetan Book of Living and Dying. Happily, attitudes toward death are beginning to change. The hospice movement, for example, is doing marvelous work in giving practical and emotional care. Yet, practical and emotional care are not enough for people who are dying. People who are dying need love and care, but they also need something even more profound. They need to discover a real meaning to death and to life. Without that, how can we give them ultimate comfort? Helping the dying, then, must include the possibility of spiritual care, because it is only with spiritual knowledge that we can truly face and understand death. With these words in mind, may we find this worship service, in this worship service, the spiritual knowledge we need to face life and death.
As Mary Johnson lights our chalice this morning, I invite you to join me in the hand motions and words for our chalice lighting. We light this chalice, symbol of Unitarian Universalism. May it remind us of the divine spark in all of creation, the power of love to heal what is broken, and to be grateful for life's blessings each day. I invite you to rise as your spirits and bodies allow to join in our opening hymn, My Life Flows On, number 108, in our hymnals and on the screen.
Each week, we participate in the spiritual practice of giving in this community a portion of financial resources that we receive. We do this because we are committed to a free and responsible church. We do this so that we may practice as a community that which we so often practice individually. You are invited to give abundantly, be it a quarter, or $100 as an act of solidarity with this most amazing community. This morning's offering will be gratefully received. May it be joyfully given.
Reciting our offertory blessing. To the work of the church, which is weaving a tapestry of love we call community, we dedicate ourselves and these our offerings.
I have remodeled two houses, and am on the third. For the first two, I wanted to do everything right. So I got all the magazines I could get on remodeling. And I don't mean Women's Day. I mean like traditional home, coastal living, you know, the upper scale ones. And I went to open houses, not in my neighborhood, but in the neighborhood that was one economic level above mine. I was going to do my houses right. This working class girl was going to prove she, as a woman, had made it into middle class, and solidly middle class. So when I remodeled those two houses, and I didn't personally do it, but as I designed it, okay, if you walked in, you would think you were walking into a magazine. Then my husband got sick. Things changed. My perspective changed. It became evident that they weren't going to come up with a miraculous cure. And the only thing that results from his illness is death. I'm remodeling my third house. I haven't looked at a magazine. I haven't gone to open house. My guiding principle this time is what's going to make us happy, what's going to make us comfortable, what's going to make it feel like a warm, cozy, and wonderful house for us and for the people who come to my house. Will they walk in, feel they can take off their shoes and put their feet up? That's the principle that I've remodeled this house by. What changed? The fact of death. However, I had one very small joy in this third house, one really great joy. Before Gail Burton died, she visited me. We were talking, and suddenly she looks around and she stops, and she says, "This is a very warm and cozy house. I did it right the third time."
So what's our theme this month? The worship associates commented that they found it interesting that attendance dropped, and I said, well, that's a few things. One is, it's October, and our parents have survived the beginning of the school year. And the second is, the minute you say the word death, folks start to get a little uncomfortable. In fact, they say that you shouldn't even use the word death in the titles to your sermons because people won't show up. My thing is, I think that's a bait and switch. If I don't tell you what I'm talking about, first off, you're used. I'm going to hear about it. And second off, I don't think it's kind. But I think what I've heard most from the people who have attended covenant groups, who have attended the worship service, who have attended the RE classes, who have been talking about this, is that it has been somewhat surprisingly liberating, that they've been able to go deeper and stay with death and thinking about their own deaths and the deaths of their loved one in a different kind of way, because they know they're amongst a community that will listen to their fears and their struggles and their pains. I can preach all day on sermons, but only you can make the community where people feel safe to say that. That's one of the gifts and powers of you as a congregation. And so I want you to know that's a gift you are giving to each other, that people can be vulnerable and authentic about some of the scariest things in their lives and feel at home. And ultimately, that is what we call the art of dying. And the art of dying is about being a community together who's kind and supportive. It's about making sure that no one is alone in those fearful and difficult places, right? So today we're talking about the various books of the dead, and for you who are those readers and librarians and folks, I certainly hope you go and look at them. They are amazing texts. The first one that was translated was the Egyptian Book of the Dead. Has anybody read that? It's an interesting text, and what's really powerful is it was written 3000-aught BC, and yet much of its wisdom is still relevant to us today. The biggest piece of wisdom that they tell us is that what ails the body ails the spirit. And every book of the dead since then, every hospice caregiver will tell you the same thing. Frequently in the hospital, we get a call from a nurse and they say, well, they're in pain. And we've tried medications, we've tried all kinds of things, and nothing's being resolved. So we think they need a chaplain. Because oftentimes, pain that we experience that can't be resolved medically has nothing to do with our bodies. It's with our minds, our hearts, and our spirits. And oftentimes I'd go and I'd meet with that person, they'd be resistant, oh no, I'm fine. They just need to give me more medication. And we'd sit and we'd talk, and ultimately we'd find out that they had something going on. It was usually one of a few things. Either they were afraid of their pain, or they were afraid about relationships that they were having that weren't going well, or they were experiencing spiritual pain because they needed forgiveness, or needed to offer forgiveness, had regrets, or had other lingering emotional, spiritual things going on. How many of you have experienced physical pain because of personal life struggles that had nothing to do with a specific illness? I think most people have at some point. If nothing else, think of that time when you've been so angry. And think about how your body felt when you felt that angry. Or when you felt so deeply sad. And how that felt in your body. The wisdom of the ancients, be it the Egyptians, the Tibetans, the Celtic folks, even, you know, Western European medicine tells us that all of that we experience lives in our body first, which is no surprise, right? We're not born as souls, we're not born as hearts, we're not born as minds, we're born as bodies, right? I think that if a woman gave birth to a mind, there'd be a whole scientific study going on about why that mind was existing independent of the body. So, where's your mind in your head? Back here, over here? Where's your heart? Where's your soul, your spirit, if you understand something like that? Anyone heard of God's Hotel?
God's Hotel is the oldest hospice in the world. It's in Germany, I believe. And it was built with architecture in mind and with art in mind. And it was only available to the poorest of people. It was built during the 100 Years' War in the 1300s. And if you look at the images and the art of it, it was literally built over a river so that those who were dying heard the water flowing underneath. And it was built so that there were individual beds with clean sheets, which in that day and age, a poor person probably hadn't seen a clean sheet in their entire lives. And with direct nursing care, and with people who would come in and sing with them and all of this and that. And it was built so that on one side, the nurses and the nuns and all the people who were serving could get to them. But on the other side, in the middle, was where all the family would hang out. And so you would see people with kids, and the pets would all be there. And there'd be music going on and prayer, and it was a community space. It was designed to help people go through what we call the art of dying well. And so that the people who were ministering would help them deal with their spiritual pain. And their families could celebrate and gather, and it would be a full and whole community. Not completely separate from the world, but living into the beauty. And the power of, they commissioned some of the greatest artwork that's ever been commissioned. The person who founded it, Nicholas Roland, actually convinced both the Pope and the King of the area that they would never, ever have to pay taxes, ever, which meant they could put that money into really cool art and architecture. So it was beautiful. And the sounds were beautiful. And I don't know about you, but when I hear the sound of a rolling river, my heartbeat drops, my body relaxes. And for those who are in death and dying and in pain, it gives them a place of peacefulness. So the art of dying well is about knowing that there is a journey. It's a describable journey. And in all of those books, the Bhagavad Gita, the Celtic Book of the Dead, which is actually multiple books in one, the Gnostic Gospels talk a lot about death and dying, and it's interesting that the Gnostic Gospels that talk about death and dying didn't make it into the New Testament. Right? They all talk about there's a consistent cycle to dying that is foreseeable, that is knowable, that is describable, and that the kinds of things that make death painful are things that can be managed and handled. And the people who handled that were called Anamkara in the Celtic tongue. And Anamkara means soul friend. And any person who walks with someone who is dying can be a soul friend, a person who walks with. And so if you have walked with someone who is dying in your life, think about what that means, that you were their Anamkara, their soul friend. The person who walked with them in the last minutes of their life, the last days and weeks of their life. I'd like to share these words with you from the Bhagavad Gita. Fear not what is real never was and never will be. What is real always was and will never be destroyed. One of the greatest fears in dying is that somehow when we die, we exist no more. And that what was real gets lost in some way. The art of dying invites us to consider that whatever may happen to the shell that we were, what was real will always be. So, in thinking about what was real will always be, I have our Wonder Box. Anybody think what might be in our Wonder Box today?
A feather.
A feather? Okay. What else might be in our Wonder Box? If you saw me put it in here, you can't answer. Go ahead. Wonder. I hope there's wonder in our Wonder Box. Yes, Phil?
Piece of paper.
Possibly, I wonder. Any other guesses what might be in our Wonder Box today? So I need a volunteer to help me open our Wonder Box. And we have our usual suspects, but I'm wondering if one of your kiddos would be interested. You want to come and help open the Wonder Box? No, you don't have to. No? Yes? I like to get different faces up here now and then, if you know what I mean. Isabella's a good volunteer. I appreciate it. All right. So can you tell us what's in the box? Go ahead and open the lid. What's in there? Leaves. Can you pull them out for me? Or grab one? You see them? All right. There's one. And there's one. And there's, gosh, how many are those? Five?
Two.
Five? Thank you very much. You can get back to your seat. I appreciate your help. So it's fall, right? Do we call fall because leaves fall? Anybody know that? Yeah. So it's fall. We have leaves, and they've lived great, beautiful lives. What's interesting is at their most beautiful is when they are dying. And when they are at their most beautiful is when they are dying. And what happens after they die? Isabella? They disintegrate, dust to dust. They turn to ash again, right? What's interesting is they fertilize the ground. They create new life, right? What was real is real forever. They always stay. The molecules of carbon, and oxygen, and all the various things that make up the nutrients of the dirt, and they make it so that grass can grow, and worms can live, and spiders can freak me out, right? They are always forever with us, even though they disintegrate year after year. May we be like the leaves when it is our time. Each week we take some time to recognize the joys and sorrows that live in our lives, to remember those people and those events that give us joy and celebration, or give us struggle and sadness, or pain or anger. Each week we gather and take some stones, either as we enter or as we come forward, and place them in the healing water of this community, which includes water from our water communion that we take annually. And so I invite you at this time, if you have a joy or a sorrow, a celebration or a hope, to come forward at this time and place your stones in the healing water of this community in a ritual of joy and celebration, sorrow.
Come sing a song with me. Come sing a song with me. Come sing a song with me, that I might know your mind. And I'll bring you hope when hope is hard to find. And I'll bring a song of love and rose in the winter time. Come sing a song with me. Come sing a song with me. Come sing a song with me, that I might know your mind. And when hope is hard to find, I'll bring a song of love and rose in the winter time.
a stone for Michael Schmidt and Jennifer Dossett, who are members of this congregation, who were wed in this space yesterday. Is it Blanton? To Patricia Blanton, who passed away on Friday, I believe. A longtime member of this congregation. To Nan Adams, who is recovering well and plans to be home on Wednesday. To all those named and unnamed, those we may forget and those that we will always remember. And for all those who cannot be with us today. I invite you to join me now in a time of silent meditation, prayer, or contemplation. And in this silent space, remember that silence means silencing oneself and not the world. I invite you to take a slow, deep breath in and out. And take a slow, deep breath in so your neighbor can hear you, in and out. And in and out. In this day, we're going to engage in a few embodiment meditations. And the first one is to do that breathing exercise. This time, you're going to make a sound as you exhale, starting high and ending low. And as you reach that high note and end on that low note, notice where it is in your body. Remember, part of the art of dying is being in tune with your physical self. This is an exercise to help be in tune. So you breathe in and out. Ooh. And you'll notice that high note starts in your nose and your head and moves deep. And when you make that noise, it shakes things up. It brings blood and energy into those spaces. So let's do that one more time. In and out. In and out. Ooh. And in and out. Ooh. So make the breath this time as long as you can, breathing in and out. Some hand motions to it. Bring some blood into our fingers, into our arms. As always, with any kind of a movement meditation, do what feels comfortable. If it's going to hurt you, please don't do it. Just do what you can do. So you're going to do the same then, breathing in and then breathing out with that sound. And so you'll breathe in and then you're going to move your hands up. Notice as you move your arms, is that when you raise them up, the blood flows down to your shoulder, and when you lower, the blood slowly moves back towards your fingers. And so it helps with your blood circulation to move in this way. So I invite you to do this one more time, breathing in. Ooh. One last time in. Ooh. The last part of our movement meditation, I invite you to rise as your spirits and bodies allow. I'm just going to move this back for a minute. So in our lives, we kind of go about normal everyday things. And when we do unusual things like this, our body moves energy in different ways, right? Our nerve endings respond differently. Blood flows differently. And so this one, as you are able, knowing that there are pews in front of you, you're going to do the same thing and then just bend down as far as is comfortable, right? Please don't bonk your head on the pew. If you have back issues, that may mean that you stop here. That's fine. Go as far forward as is comfortable for you, all right? So again, we're gonna breathe in. Ooh. And one more time in. Ooh. And one last time. Roll back up. Take a moment and think about how your body feels now. You feel a little more energy. Maybe your face is a little more flushed. That's your blood running through your body. That's what it's supposed to do. So may your body be blessed in its life as in its death. For as we have learned from the art of dying, how you live is how you prepare for your death. Your movement and everything that you do makes it easier later in life. So may you be blessed in body, mind, heart, and soul. And may you bless one another. Bless you. Please stay standing as we sing Comfort Me.
Comfort me.
Bless your neighbors in greeting. Please be seated.
Our reading today is based on a Celtic text. I pray that you will have the blessing of being consoled and sure about your own death. May you know in your soul that there is no need to be afraid. When your time comes, may you be given every blessing and shelter that you need. May there be a beautiful welcome for you in the home where you are going. You are not going somewhere strange. You are going back to the home you never left. May you have a wonderful urgency to live your life to the full. May you live compassionately to transfigure everything that is negative within you and about you. When you come to die, may it be after a long life. May you be peaceful and happy in the presence of those who care for you. May your going be sheltered and your welcome be assured. May your soul smile in the embrace of your Anamakara.
So what does Anamkara mean again?
Soul friend.
Soul friend. Soul friend. How about you just say the name of somebody who you consider to be a soulful friend in your life? Just say it out loud. Julie. The Celtic people from which this word Anamkara comes from are probably some of the greatest, wisest voices in the hospice movement today. The Celtic Book of Dying is a collection of wisdom from multiple sources, from an oral tradition. And even as the Catholic Church came in and took over in England and Ireland and Scotland, the wisdom of the Anamkara, the people who walked with the dying so frequently that they were known for it, some of them even became saints in the Catholic Church later in life. One of the women who was well known as an Anamkara, people insisted that she could bilocate. She could be with two people who were dying at once. She was so skilled at being with the dying. And there were a few key things that we've learned from the Celts and from all the people who sit with the dying. And the first is, we must be like Anamkara. We must be with people when they die. We must walk with them. It is a commandment of living. And it is not easy. Walking with someone who is dying, being with them in their final moments, being with them as they are and not as we wish them to be, some of the most difficult, painful, and empowering work you can engage in. It is a beautiful, difficult thing to do. The second is to recognize that there are stages of dying and that we need to be with people. I notice that when I sit with congregants who are dying, there's usually a moment where they refuse to talk about it. I'm not going to talk about that yet. And I usually know how to respond to that, and we'll sing songs and read poems and things about death and dying, but we won't talk about their particular dying. And I always know we're getting close to time because they bring it up. We've established that I'm willing to talk about dying with them so that when they're ready, they say, I'm ready to go. This is what I'm dealing with. And by the time we get to the last moments of their life, they're kind of at that place of, can I just get out of here already? It's an interesting thing to watch when someone is dying and they're just ready to go. They're ready to be done. It's in their souls. It's time. There's a knowable process with which we all seem to go through, regardless of culture, community. The third thing is that we need to understand that relationship between our emotional pain and our physical pain. Part of that movement meditation that we did is to notice, where is the tension in your body? Because it might tell you something about how you're feeling. Does anybody know why you get an upset stomach when you're sad? There's a scientific reason. Chemicals, absolutely. There's another reason, though. You have emotional receptors in your stomach, the same ones that exist in your brain. Right? You actually have neurocells in your tummy. And so when you feel upset, not only do you feel it in your brain, you feel it in your stomach. Our body tells us things. So if you're like, I don't know why I have an upset stomach, I've been eating all the same things, you might be upset and just not sure. Okay? So know that there's a direct relationship between the physical, the spiritual, emotional, and mental. The fourth thing is to know that many of us live with some form of spiritual pain in our lives. And oftentimes we can't let go until we deal with it. The spiritual pain can include a number of things. We've already talked in the past couple of weeks about needing to offer and receive forgiveness. To have regret is often a spiritual pain that holds people from dying. Another one is a sense of hopelessness. I don't know how many patients I met with in the hospital who were Christian, who in their final moments were so terrified that heaven wasn't real. They lost all hope and they couldn't let go. It wasn't that they didn't believe in God anymore or anything like that. They just, how could they know for sure? And our conversations would be around how to find hopefulness again. Another place of spiritual pain often had to do with estrangement. Not just forgiveness, but having people in their lives with whom they wanted to know that those folks would be okay, or they wanted relationships with them again. So many parents don't want to die because they're so afraid of what's going to happen to their children. It was interesting, the hospital, the parents that knew that their kids were taken care of had a much easier dying process than the ones who weren't sure. So we live with these kinds of spiritual pains in our lives, and you live with them now. You don't have to wait until you're dying to know what they are, because we have spiritual pain throughout our life. And so when we talk about living in order to prepare for dying, what we're talking about is dealing with our baggage now. Because I promise you, if you don't deal it now, it's going to come up near the end. The baggage never goes away, even if we want it to. And the final thing is that we prepare throughout our lives for dying. That it's something that we live with, that we know is true. You don't have to be, you know, what is it, the goth community where they, you know, they get full on into death mode and it's all about death and it's the end of the world as we know it, or, you know, some of the Virginia Woolf and some of the poets are all writing about death and dying all the time. We don't have to get into that. Any more that we should be in that place that is so common in our society, where death holds a fear place in our heart where we can't talk about it. We're all going to die, every person sitting here. Just like those leaves, they got to go sometime. I love leaves, but if I saw leaves 24/7, actually, it was one thing about living in the coast of California. The weather's always the same, and there's always leaves. Drove me nuts. It was lovely, but if heaven has no seasons, I'm not sure I want to be a part of it. So we all have to go. We all have to go. But we can leave to some degree on our terms. And if you take nothing else from this month, I hope you take away that. That you can die on your terms with Anamkara at your side, with your soul friend, if you let it be. So be like a leaf on the wind for my firefly fans out there. Be that leaf on the wind. May it be so. I invite you to rise as your spirits and bodies allow and join us in our closing hymn, in our monthly hymn of the month, There is a Love. And we had an issue with finding music, so we're going to attempt to do this a cappella. But I'm hoping we know this song well enough now. And some of you may not know it at all, but, you know, for those of you who do, if I can find the note. I don't have the note. There is a love holding me. There is a love holding all that I. softly. There is a love holding me. Listen to your neighbor. There is a love holding all that I love. There is a love holding all I rest in that love. I invite you to face across the chandelier singing us. There is a love holding us. There is a love holding all that we love. There is a love holding all we rest in this love. And we'll sing I last loudly. There is a love holding me. There is a love holding all that I love. There is a love holding all I rest in that love. Look around this room at one another. Look at these amazing bodies, miraculous. Thousands and thousands and thousands upon thousands, squared by thousands of atoms and cells that have traveled the universe to be in you in this moment. What wasn't real never was. What is real will always be. None of us will be here 110 years from now, let's say. Give our young ones the benefit of a doubt. But our cells never leave permanently. They transform. And so in the art of dying, we lean into the natural processes of life, the miraculous beauty of the world we live in. So as you look at one another, be grateful, for you are not alone. Be anamkara to one another. Blessed be. Go in peace. Our service is ended. Let our worship is ended. Let our service begin.